Hi everyone, I'm Paula Deacon, one of the clinical leads from the IPOPS team here in the Midlands Partnership Foundation Trust in Staffordshire. I just want to thank everybody who took the time to listen to our previous episode of Integrated ESPs and Physiotherapists Working, and I hope you found it interesting. Today I'm joined by my colleague Nikki Warren, who has for the past 18 months been undertaking an ESP fellowship role within IPOPS. We thought it might be of interest for her to share her experience of the transition from a Band 6 into an MSK role at an advanced level. And I'd like to hand over to Nikki for her to share her journey with you. So, Nikki, welcome.
Hi, Paula.
So would you like to tell the listeners, when you qualified, what's been your expertise over the years and where you are to date, really?
Right, so I trained at Coventry University, graduated in 2005, did a couple of years junior rotations at Worcester Royal and various trusts there. And then I became a musculoskeletal band 6 physiotherapist, but for about 6 years at Nottingham University Hospitals I rotated within musculoskeletal practice, which included trauma, burns and plastics, shoulder unit, various rotations, and then decided I wanted to specialise in outpatient physiotherapy, and I came to IPOPS in October 2014.
Blimey.
As a Band 6 MSK physio, keen to learn, keen to improve my skills and progress in the service, where I am to date. Had a bit of time out with the second baby for a year, and then came back after that year, and was really keen to progress in that role.
Excellent. So how did the fellowship come about?
So when I came back off maternity leave, I was really keen to progress I still wanted to stay clinical. I didn't want to go into any managerial roles. I knew that from being out of it for a year. I knew I wanted to get back into a clinical role. The difficulty was I was at Band 6 level, our advanced practitioners, ESPs, are at an 8A level, and it was just making that transition. How could I do it? How could I work towards it? So I had an honest and open discussion with Paula in my appraisal and said, what can we do? And she gave me the great opportunity to think about doing a pilot role. So that started in October 2017. Yeah. I worked as a year, still at a band 6 pay, still at that level. I was at the top of the band, so I was quite happy to do that, just to gain that experience. So that's how the fellowship came about. We set up that role together, really, that programme together.
Yeah. And then, obviously, now you're band 7, so what happened from that year? We did a year, didn't we, to see if it would be feasible. Try and get some governance written to support the role. And then after a year, I think we had some staff move to different posts or outside the organisation.
Yes.
So I think we
created a
we freed up some
post.
Money, and we thought we'd really like to succession plan with someone like yourself and grow our own, and unfortunately we got you on that band 7 role. And paid to do the training post.
Yeah, so I felt it was a really good transition, because I think it's a huge jump from a band 6 MSK outpatient physio to an advanced practitioner role. And for me, just going and getting a job in it and having to learn on the job, I think would have been, and getting paid at that level and having to be safe at that level, I don't think I was there yet. So I felt that the band 7 transition role was a really, really good way for me to do it. I've obviously got 2 kids, I'm a busy mum, I'm part-time, so it gave me a really nice transition.
Yeah, you're only 2 days. We've done it for two days.
So it was a really nice transition to do it in that way. Within the programme, it just allowed me to do it in my own time, so that programme could be phased out for somebody who wanted to do it more quickly, full-time. Yeah. You know, it was just set up as a really nice role that, you know, could progress.
Yeah.
As we created it, really.
Yeah, yeah, we've developed it as we've gone along, haven't we?
Yes, yeah.
So what have you had to do from the governance perspective to ensure, you know, you've been competent throughout? Would you like to share?
Yeah, so we decided to create a programme and a portfolio of evidence to go with that programme. Initially, I started to shadow some of the clinical leads and ESPs on their clinics, so looking at different members of staff rather than just shadowing one person. I did have a mentor throughout it, Emma Keatley, who's seen me through it along with Paula and Denise.
Well, we've all grown it together, really, yes, haven't we? It's been a joint effort.
It really has.
Writing the program.
So we started with shadowing, and then I had observational weeks for around about 9 to 12 weeks. We did that for, so every single patient, new patient I saw, who was a more complex patient that came in, I'd have to be observed, doing the whole assessment, subjective, objective. It was like being a student again. Very scared, but I did it. And then we'd discuss that afterwards. And, you know, what's great here is I was given the time to do that, the time for discussion afterwards, the time for reflecting on it. We signed off those patients. You know, I came up with a whole sort of program of things that I've got to learn from that. All my learning needs came from that, so that guided my, my role really, my development, what I needed to practice, what I needed to get better at, and it just honed my skills as well as for clinical reasoning for differential diagnosis, which is, you know, really key part of this role.
Mm.
And we're pretty good as physios, but we're thinking outside this whole, just what physio do they need? You know, it's huge, but that probably goes on to the next question. After that, we've done the observational. I then just came out and discussed. We worked out, I discussed 72 new patients in all, probably too many.
I think that was more than we thought.
More than we agreed, but we did in the end. So it was coming out and discussing, and it's really along those lines of my must, should and could. What do I need to do, and what am I doing? What does that patient need? Which pathway are they going along? What are my differential diagnoses? So we went from that. Then on to just auditing my notes regularly so that I'm making those decisions, news and follow-ups.
Mm.
And now I'm just currently, then we went through diagnostics, me training to be able to order X-ray, MRI, ultrasound scan, bloods. So went through the training procedures for that required by the Trust.
And your training.
Training, all signed off, some MRI training. And then we're now just currently on me leading on ESP discussions with some of the Band 6 members of staff and just signing off my competency to do that.
Yeah.
So that's the governance. And along the way, we've got paperwork which has been signed by everybody who's observed me, who's discussed patients with me.
Yeah, and you've developed a lot of that yourself as well with Emma.
Yeah, with
you?
Emma.
You know, again, if anyone would ever want to see that and share it, we're more than happy to get people to contact us. But it's been a fantastic piece of work that you guys have also put together to aid this portfolio of governance. So we know we can see your learning journey should we ever need to. Question, you know, how much have you done?
Or what training have you done? Well, it's all here.
Yeah.
And this proves that I've done it. Whereas just taking the job and doing the job, is there any evidence there? Probably not enough. But that's what most people have to do because there's no other real pathways to it.
Yeah.
Apart from potentially some modules. But
yeah. I mean, have you had to do any modules? What sort of?
No, the only one that I'm currently looking to do is the injection module, just so I've got some evidence of master's level module work.
Yeah. I mean, we have spoken, I think, about the bloods modules, but we do a lot in-house, I guess, don't we, with the medics, that it wasn't something we felt we needed to spend, I suppose, funds on when we've got other stuff we want you to do.
And I felt really that first year I needed to really hone my clinical skills, my differential diagnostic skills and just patient mileage. I didn't feel that those modules were relevant until maybe later on when I'm adding them in as those advanced skills, really.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to muddy the waters with that. I just wanted to... And obviously results training, I do results, I do triage now, none of which I did before. So it was learning those new skills and then putting it together with the patient, which has been really helpful, actually, to do that.
Brilliant. Thank you, Nikki. What would you say then, that transition from physiotherapy practice to an advanced practitioner? Sometimes I think when you're doing the job, for example, myself, who's done it for many years, it might just look quite an easy transition. And I know the conversations we've had that you've said it's really not that easy. And when we've observed you, there's a completely different mindset, really. I just wondered whether they'd be able to give your experience on how you've found the difference and the transition.
It is a difficult transition because you are always, to start with, going to think as a physio, you're always going to think, well, what physio does this patient need? And actually you're coming into it from a completely different, not different perspective, but a broader perspective. Mm. You've got to go in thinking, right, I've got this patient in front of me, what pathway are they going to need to go down? Do they need diagnostics? What are those diagnostics and why? Or actually, is this something that's out of our remit and it needs medical management? And it's just thinking in, about all the different systems. Have we covered everything? Have I asked the pertinent questions? What extra questioning do I need? So it's just those advanced clinical skills, really, and knowing those questions to ask. Mm. Whereas as a physio, I might not have known the questions to ask until I've done the more advanced, complex clinical role and actually sitting in and having the ESP saying, well, have you thought about this? Well, why would I do that? And learning that on the job has been great. I'm not sure me doing a module in that would have really related it as well to actually physically doing it on the job with the patient sitting in front of you with all those complexities, and then being able to pick out all those little things that do I need to go down that path, don't I? What do I need to sieve out and where do I need to be? And what does that patient need from me at this point? Not just thinking physiotherapy, thinking outside that whole realm, which we do to an extent as physios, but it's just making that even more sort of advanced and it can be much more complex, but it's just picking out those right things and then making the decision on, well, if I do a diagnostic, which one would it be?
Yeah.
And why? And asking those questions, clinically reasoning through it, and just really improving those skills.
Yeah.
And having someone watch me and know I can do them. Because probably haven't been watched since I was about five.
Yeah. How's that been? Because that
that's tough. That's the tough transition, is having somebody coming in with you. You're back to student days. You're doubting yourself, thinking, they're going to find out I'm rubbish.
That imposter syndrome.
Yes, I've been on faking it for the past 10 years. And am I faking it as a physio? No, it's really tough, but actually it's brilliant because you realise you're not, you're fine.
Yeah.
But there's so many areas that you don't see that others see that you can develop. And it wasn't just on clinical skills, it was communication skills. Because we all think we're pretty good communicators as physios generally. Maybe not so much on the listening for me. Things like that needed to improve. And it was just someone having that unbiased and outside view that's actually, do you realise that, you do this and it's habits you pick up and how can we develop those and improve those?
Yeah.
So it's a brilliant thing to just do that anyway.
Yeah.
That we should all really do regularly.
Yeah. I think what I've seen you grow is that, like you're saying, that communication skills, because I think there's a real skill in itself of being able to communicate a bit like a chameleon, just changing your communication depending on the patient, and some you need to pull blood out of a stone almost, and others you can just, just have they're very story, they're like being a storyteller.
Yeah.
And I've definitely seen you grow in your ability to manipulate your communication style depending on the patient that's in front of you.
Hopefully.
So that's I think that's been a brilliant thing to see you develop. Is there any advice you would give others considering if they're thinking of moving into this? Because again, first contact practitioner roles, these more responsibility, I think, is a big thing, isn't it? Moving from being in a physiotherapy profession and doing physiotherapy to these more advanced roles. Is there anything any advice you'd give?
It is a big responsibility, and I think it's the stress of that sometimes that which people don't appreciate. And the governance required for that role as well is huge. It's you being comfortable that you're safe and you're confident in that. I still struggle with that confidence sometimes. Have I done the right thing? Have I missed anything? But you know, if you're considering doing this as a role, I think you need to go and shadow advanced practitioners, first contact practitioners. I think you need to have people watch you at that level, where you can improve, what you can do, what you can go away and learn from. Reading around the subject, obviously all the different conditions, signs and symptoms of different MSK conditions.
Do you think you can retain it? I suppose some people might be able to retain it, but sometimes
that's just an added extra. But to be honest, it's actually when you see it in a patient, you remember it. You can go and revise all you want, but that's probably out of your head. But it's just some background stuff that you can do to add to it. But I would say you've got to do it on the job. Yeah. I think you need to go and ask your managers, create me an opportunity.
Appraisal.
Say, you know, okay, I'll do it as a band six. I'm top of my band. I'm not going anywhere. And people even said to me, really, are you going to do that with no extra pay? And I said, well, what's the alternative? I just stay where I am and never progress, or I take that opportunity. And I'm next in line if that opportunity comes up then.
Because you've got the training, you've got the skills. You'll hit the ground running in that post if we
Are there, you need some succession planning and you need some progression, and you can do that in house. You can do it in this type of role. It doesn't have to be done as a master's module. You know, you can do a lot on the job training it's been great for me
as an apprenticeship post,
and I think that could be created in lots of places without any extra money. Which everybody's tight on budget.
Yes.
You know, but that's the ways that, you know, those are some of the ways it could be done. And just getting people to watch you. It's great. Right, what other skills would I need? Where should I get what shall I do? You know, can I see some of these complex patients with you? Add an extra one in. You know, if you work part time like me, on your day off, if you can, go and watch some people.
Yeah, just take every opportunity.
Every opportunity you can take, because it's not just gonna happen. And making that transition is tough, and you might not want to just do it when you go into that job. Yeah. You might want to have that experience before.
Yeah. I mean, you're 18 months down the line, and you know, you've done fantastic. I mean, it's been an absolute pleasure to support that development. And you'd like to think if the opportunity came and you could get the 8A, then someone else would go into that fellowship post. You know, we've got the programme there to deliver it and support it, and you feel it's been a benefit to you.
Oh, it's brilliant for me. Well, I've got a band 7 post, which is great. I've progressed in my career at a time when I didn't think I would, because I'd got a young baby, but you know, I was just lucky to be here in IPOPS, and you know, Polly, you created that opportunity, and I think that's forward thinking, that's vision. A lot of people don't forward think, and they don't have that vision to see that, and they need to do that.
There was also the risk we could lose you.
and
we didn't want to do that either.
But you were quite open with me. If we can't offer you a job, Nikki, it gives you the training if anyway. You know, if we couldn't do it.
Yeah, we'd be benefiting.
We're still helping you.
And I think services that can see that, you can benefit while people are training, to have that staff. If you haven't got anything yourself, it puts them in an opportunity to apply for other roles, but you've also gained along the way, and fortunate for us you're still here, and hopefully you'll be with us a long time.
Absolutely.
And
help
the next fellow that, if they're fortunate to have that post, and we can continue helping support and train people
and get that educational sort of aspect of the role as well, be involved with that. Which, I'd be really keen to do, because I think there's very few opportunities at the moment at that level. So you've just got to try and see what you can create, and see what you can do with it. Even if it's just a day a week, doing some extra training in that. But yeah. No, it's been brilliant, and you know, I've really appreciated that opportunity. It's been great, but it's not an easy undertaking.
No,
you know, it's responsibility. It can be stressful. You doubt yourself constantly, but you've just got to keep seeing the patients, keep asking the questions, not be afraid to say, you know, just come and I don't know.
Yeah.
Can you help me? Or no, I know what I'm doing and I need to do it and I need to cut the apron strings and just go for it now.
Yeah. Well, you had one today, didn't you? That you're yeah. you know. it's just experience, and now you've come such a long way that the experiential learning allows you to develop maybe a little bit more sometimes, and like you say, doing the theoretical knowledge at colleges and things like that, which is great about apprenticeships, isn't it? That it's on the job, yeah. And we can go through the diagnostics, we can look at the images, we can help support you, get the radiologists in, and then support it with the paperwork to give us the governance.
Which we've done along the line.
Yeah.
You know, and we can take our time doing it, which has been really, really good.
Yeah.
To see that and do that, really. But no, you just need to create those opportunities and go for it. Because that's the way physios, you know, need to progress.
With the right people for the job, I think, can't we? You know, it's a phenomenal responsibility, but it's also with the right people with the right skills. Do you feel, just to finish off, obviously there's been a lot of talk about advanced practitioners being, you know, almost still the biomedical aspect of it and losing the rehabilitation physiotherapy skills. What would you say from your role? Have you felt that there's been a split?
No, I think we're lucky here because we're so integrated with our physios and our ESPs.
Yeah.
And we have those discussions all the time about how you can progress rehab with patients. I don't think you tend to lose those skills here.
Mm.
And that's why it's been so good here, because we're so integrated as a service.
Yeah.
We've got access to ESPs. We work with them side by side. I still like to rehab my patients as well, because I still like to keep that skill. There might be a time when I can't do that.
Mm.
You know, if the service changes, and that's okay. But I still like to keep up to date with those advances so that I can advise other people. Or if I think that patient just needs a little bit of advice and education, I still need those skills to do it.
Yeah, you still do that, don't you? Yeah. You don't refer them in to see another physio. Never. You are a physio.
No, I'd never send them off with, well, I'm the ESP and I've told you what it is and now you're going to go and see the physio. I think it's nice to do that. I'm still a physio as well as this role.
Yeah.
So I'd still, and it keeps my skills up. You know, we did a strength and conditioning course recently, which was amazing, and that's changed my practice again, and I still need that knowledge and those skills to do that.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, if that's what the patient needs, I can do that, rather than you wait another 4 weeks and then see a physio. No, it's nice to have it integrated.
That one-stop shop with the clinician being,
you
know, all singing, all dancing, really, which we mainly are here, so... I meant dancing, not all singing, all dancing.
that's what's been really good, to be able to do that, because it's so integrated. And I think that's probably a model that that works really well for us and our community, because patients love it. They can do everything under one roof.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, thank you for your time, Nikki.
No,
I hope people find that, one, inspiring, because I think you've done an amazing job of almost being our guinea pig, really. So I think it's been 18 months of learning curve for us all. And like I say, the governance that we've written up supports the work, and I think it is transferable to others. If anyone would be interested, please, you know, get in touch with us. But thank you very much, Nikki.
No,
thanks for listening.